Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It's the 24th of April, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Let me introduce the panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Yo, Joe.
Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller joins
morning,
us every
Joe.
Tuesday. It's Tuesday. Good morning. Morning. And our counterterrorism expert Malcolm Nance joins us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Always good to have you here. All right. Well, let's begin by reminding you that you can get in on the conversation by going to panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We would love to hear from you and hear from your letters. Let us begin with, we'll talk to our counterterrorism expert about what happened in Toronto yesterday, the van killing. This story just was just listening to the BBC report. The killing began on a busy lunchtime thoroughfare in Toronto on Monday when a white rental rider van ran over a pedestrian crossing the street, then mounted a sidewalk and began plowing into people indiscriminately. One by one, said a witness who identified himself as Ali. Holy God, I've never seen such a sight before. I feel sick. By the end, at least 10 people were dead. 15 were injured. As of right now, this still remains in the hands of the Toronto Police Department. It has not moved past that. No terrorist organization has taken responsibility for this. And meanwhile, we're just left wondering exactly what happened by the driver's actions, appearing, of course, intentional, but did not seem, at least according to Toronto Police Chief Mark Saunders, to be an act of terrorism. How can you tell?
Right. Well, principally, what you've seen here yesterday is a good example of an individual using terrorist tactics to affect whatever is going on in his head. And it's very difficult to suss out quickly whether that individual was acting through an inspiration by a terrorist group. We saw this actually in some of the shootings that took place down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Dallas by two individuals who were African-American who, at first blush, were carrying out an act of terrorism. And then we found that they had no political affiliation. They had no political motivation. It was an act of psychological drama that was going on in their heads in two separate incidents. Whereas terrorism, by definition, has to be an act of violence or political, an act of violence or threat of violence, which has a political message, which impacts victims beyond which impacts a community beyond the immediate victims. Which means he had to have been doing it for a purpose, a political purpose, to send a message to a broader audience. Where in fact it appears that this individual, according to Toronto Police and the RCMP, they believe that he, at this point, it's not terrorism, that he was acting alone. He had a history of psychological defects and used a tactic that he clearly saw on television. My problem with this, and I was one of the first people to say, we don't know if it's terrorism. I've driven down sidewalks, all right? My problem with this is that he chose a rider rental vehicle. And there is very specific literature by Al-Qaeda that said, rent a rider van. And that being stuck in his head, he could have seen that and gotten it there and carried out an act of just violence against the community, whereas he could have been inspired by a terrorist group that he has no affiliation with.
Well, I think the most pressing question right now is, why were you driving down sidewalks?
in the invasion of Kuwait in 1991, in Kuwait City, the roads were mined, and we just like driving down sidewalks.
I got you.
Well, 60 miles
per hour. You live in New York City, and you're somebody has double parked you in, and the only way out is on the sidewalk. I've done it.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that makes this strikingly different than the terrible over the weekend shootings of the Waffle House, which was just a terrible thing. It was fortunately in Nashville. It was somebody was a hero and they stepped forward and they prevented this shooter from being able to kill more people. But in the U.S., if you want an efficient people killer, You walk into a store and buy a R15, right, and you use that to mow them down. In Canada, those aren't available, so you have to go find a more creative way to take out your inner hostility and your anger and your insanity. And you know, people will find a way to do it, but I'm on the side of let's make it so you can't get AR-15s here. I think that would be
I'll tell you one thing.
Step.
That Waffle House attack is much closer to an act of terrorism. Mm. The individual had a political philosophy. He was a sovereign citizen, but he also had a history of mental defects, and he should, by all measures, not have been authorized to have a gun.
Will you remind everybody what sovereign citizen is?
Right. A sovereign citizen movement is a very bizarre, almost cult-like graft movement, which was founded in the United States, where these individuals believe that there is no authority that can bound an individual citizen. He can declare himself a sovereign away from all governmental authority. But interestingly, they do recognize the county sheriff as the only law enforcement authority. And so these individuals, like Timothy McVeigh, they will take their license plates off. There's an entire industry of grifters who go around and sell seminars on how you don't have to pay taxes, you don't have to license your car, how no law enforcement officer can ever stop you. When I train law enforcement here in New York State, I tell them, you will probably never see a terrorist member of ISIS or Al-Qaeda, but you will go to guns with a member of sovereign citizen. They go straight to the guns. So they're violent in that, you know, their little scam is being broken up. And there are different groups. There are African-American sovereign citizens, and the Baton Rouge shooter from a few years ago belonged to this African-American sovereign citizen group in Louisiana.
But this is a 28-year-old kid,
yeah,
who had brushes with the law at the White House, had his weapons removed, given back to his father. The father returned the weapons to his son. And
we're talking Nashville, the
Nashville
Waffle House
shooter. My apologies.
Right.
But my question is, so, I mean, sovereign citizen or not, obviously, as you say, I mean, he was mentally ill.
Right. But this movement in Tennessee is one of those states where they felt that his right to have the firearms returned to them after a critical incident on a federal facility in Washington, D.C., was their number one priority, right? Any other incident, I lived in Washington, D.C., I had one of the only registered sniper weapon systems in that city, and every cop in that city knew my address, right? But if I had had an incident near the White House, that weapon would never have been returned to me, ever. And this guy was given they gave his father the weapons back. And his father thought, okay, I'm a responsible citizen. I'll give it to my son, even though he had already had a critical mental health breakdown at the White House.
Now, you will remember that John Faso, before these very microphones, said quite clearly that one of the reasons he was against the gun control was that he thought a father giving a gun to his son was something that should not be interfered with.
And when I saw this and read about it in the newspaper, the first thing I thought about was that interview that you had with Faso, where he says, you know, you shouldn't need to have a license to give your son or grandson a firearm, and that just seems like a glaring loophole. It's the same thing as the gun show loophole.
Well, in this case, it was quite a bit different.
It
for
is
a father
different. This
to,
isn't a legacy
no
thing.
It wasn't a legacy
no
thing.
For a father who knew his son had been trying to get into the White House and had these horrific weapons to decide to give them back to the kid, I mean, he's probably just as insane as his son is. That's all I can think.
Okay, so what would you do? I'm sorry, but what would you do? I mean, I keep thinking of my little grandson, I think of my little granddaughter. What would you do if somebody eradicated, you know, the people you love most? What's the appropriate thing to do? Put them into a mental facility and let them out after, you know, maybe 5 years?
Well, I mean, our system does have a way to deal with people who are criminally insane, and you know, I'll let the system take care of them. But maybe what we ought to do is make it so the criminally insane people can't get their hands on killing weapons, assault weapons.
Especially when they're already in the news cycle for, you know, having an AR-15 at the White House.
Attempting to breach the White House. You know, there's legislation out there right now which proposes that they create these red flag letters, which is a law that will allow any family member to red flag a family member that they think is dangerous. Good case in point, the shooter that was inflamed by Glenn Beck about 5 or 6 years ago, who drove from Sacramento and was going to San Francisco to kill everyone in the Tides Foundation. This small, you know, voter registration group that no one had ever heard anything about until Glenn Beck put it into this grand, you know, Rube Goldberg conspiracy theory. He was going to murder everyone in there and then go to the ACLU and murder everyone in there.
Will you remind us what happened?
What happened is that his mother called state troopers and said, I think my son's going to do violence. They stopped him outside of Oakland, and they had a massive 30-minute gun battle with this guy on the street. He was arrested. He survived. He was arrested. And then later on gave an interview about how Glenn Beck essentially told him to go do this. You know, but he had a firearm in a state with very strict firearm laws. And if his mother hadn't called the state troopers, there would have been a massacre in San Francisco. So there needs to be legislation to where your weapons can be taken away from you. Big gun owner, right? I've been in military my entire life, but some people don't need to have these things, and they need to be taken away from you when you present a threat to the public.
Nice thing about Mike is he always argues the other side, and while I don't always agree with him, there is always, I want to come back and say, you don't need a gun. I mean, I had a cousin who got pushed into an oncoming subway train by a woman who was quite crazy and who argued before the jury, and one juror believed her, and they had to have a second trial, that Jesus told her to do it. And the juror...
There are going to be insane people, and there's going to be rental car places and rider rental truck places. There's going to be subways. I mean, we all are at risk of just the fiat of somebody who has lost their mind. But I think allowing someone like this kid in Nashville to get his hands on an AR-15 just demonstrates how weird things have gotten.
Can we discuss the target set, as we call it in my business? He went after a Waffle House at 3 in the morning that was predominantly filled with African Americans, and he shot dead 4 African Americans. And the man that stopped him was African American. There has not been a word out of this White House about this, that this hero stopped a mass murder of practically everyone in that place.
And he was a remarkable person. I mean, he stepped forward, he risked his own life. He was shot too. And you know, you make a really good point, because that guy would be at the White House.
Right now.
Getting an award.
Yeah.
In another administration, any other administration.
Any normal one with decency. But we're not there.
And let's remind everybody, unless I'm wrong, that the shooter was Caucasian, right?
Yes, he was.
JP?
My question for Malcolm is, on back to the van, walking around New York City, you see those cylindrical barriers that would likely prevent a car or a van from coming up and mowing down people on the sidewalk in New York City. Is that general practice in cities like Toronto or cities around America, or is that just New York City?
No, it's general practice in many cities. They're called bollards. And what they're designed is anti-vehicle devices, but they're used mainly in high crash areas. I was just in London, went over the London Bridge going to the Parliament. They have now installed these anti-vehicle bollards there that are truck worthy. Okay, you can hit it with a 25-ton truck and it'll rip the underside of it out, and you can barely tell that they're there. My wife's a landscape architect. She did a lot of for Washington, D.C., and she did a lot of anti-vehicle design that they crafted in there that you don't even see them, you know, knee-high things called haw-haws and these bollards and things to deflect a vehicle so that if they hit a curb. But you can't do it everywhere. You can't protect everywhere. The best solution, of course, is what we call anti-terrorism, which is, you know, measures in the social networks and in the community itself, which prevents people from, you know, adopting these ideas. But the idea is out there, so any mentally unhealthy person can adopt them.
I do know on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, those bollards exist in front of obvious targets of opportunity. So, for example, in certain synagogues and Jewish centers and other things have them there.
Yeah.
Well, down in Midtown, you don't even need them because the traffic moves so slowly. Nothing could get up any speed.
Yeah, it couldn't go more than 2 miles.
We had an incident a year ago, which we thought was an act of terrorism. It turned out to be an accident right there at 43rd and 7th, right there in the middle of Times Square. And a vehicle accelerated through a light, saw a pedestrian, lost control, and went into one of the four corners full of pedestrians.
Oh, my God.
There's nothing you can do about that. And there were bollards down the middle of Times Square, but not where pedestrians actually have to flow through. So, you know, the best prevention, of course, is having a great community.
I did want to argue with Mike a little bit more about...
be my guest, Alan.
He says the justice system will handle it after the fact. But I think there's got to be a message that gets sent. We're sorry. We're really sorry that you're insane. You killed four people. There has to be a price for that.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I don't think the person should be allowed back into society.
Yeah, okay. Well, then we're on the same
page.
And I think your point also was between the incident in the White House and between the incident in the Waffle House, there should have been more, besides just taking the guns away, if something actually could have been done with the young man to help him.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see whether the father is charged for giving his son guns. I listened this morning that the ATF says that they may charge him, or he may be able to be charged. What if he's not able to be charged? What if that's totally legal to just give your son?
Would they have to prove? They'd have to prove that he knew.
Done with malicious intent.
Yeah.
Because I thought I read, and I could be wrong, and I have to double check it. I thought I read that the giving of the guns was legal in that state. Is that correct?
It's in any state. That's the FASO loophole.
There'll be civil cases, too, probably.
Well, I think the key question, knowing BATF, will be who purchased the firearms. Then that purchase, when he transferred the firearms, was it a legal transfer or, you know, was it a loaner? And then he could be held as an accomplice if he was aware of the person doing that. But firearms laws are really hard to crack. And they were designed that way by the NRA to make sure there's no culpability by anybody.
All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We have a lot to talk about. We also will have letters, I'm sure. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Malcolm Nance making up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has some letters for us right now.
All right. From Michael. Malcolm keeps loudly telling, it says, for a year now, of the downfall of this administration with indictments and removal from office. When? I'm tired of waiting. That's from Michael.
Gosh, democracy is so slow.
It is.
You know, he's tired of waiting. Look, I recall that I said it would take up to 2 years. What I did predict was that last year we would have some of the most significant events occur in March of this year. And it turns out some of the most significant events had secretly occurred in February of this year. Michael Cohen doing the indictments against Robert Gates. The building blocks are in place, but you know, investigations take time. You're talking about the political removal of a president. That's going to be another year at best. So stop being impatient. I mean, how long did it take Nixon? Was it total time? Was 933 days or something?
Well, to be fair to Michael, who wrote that note, I'm not sure if tongue with in cheek when he wrote that.
Patience. It's time.
I'm tired.
I get that question all the time. Be patient, right? Democracy is messy and slow. But it eventually moves.
Beth wanted to tell Joe, who had referred to one of the murderers here, as 28 is not a kid. Beth from Pennsylvania. Yeah. Well, there are those of us who are parents and grandparents who think, hey, 28's a kid.
I don't know. I just think,
It's still adolescence, according to many psychologists. 30 is the age.
I don't know. I just think I just think of it as a young person. But whatever.
Yeah, okay.
It just shows my age.
Going on, Mike says, licensing and registration of firearms. We need national licensing and registration of all owners and firearms so we can have a single license to revoke and we can impose criminal penalties for transferring a firearm to an unlicensed person. Now, I have to say, my own response to that would be, sure, we do need it. Now go do it.
You know, I'm not a big fan of, again, big gun owner, I'm not a big fan of registering all your firearms. Again, I registered a firearm in Washington, D.C., because it was a federal jurisdiction. It took almost a month. It took my fingerprints, all of that stuff. But I am a big fan of licensing and insuring firearms. Licensing the owners, because if I have to have a license to drive a car and insurance to drive a car, then the same thing can be done with any product out there. You should be. I mean, you should be proud to say that you're a licensed gun owner. But you're never going to count every firearm in the United States. That's just impossible. People literally bury these things in their backyards in Columbia County. I can tell you that much. So get insurance. Make them pay for it.
Jennifer says, Toronto attack morning. Can Malcolm speak to the incredible restraint of the police officer in Toronto that the police officer in Toronto showed? In the U.S., I believe he'd be killed. Jen.
Oh, absolutely. That was amazing. And that was my first thought. The police car rolled up on the attacker after he had crashed. And he got out. And it turns out he was holding his cell phone in his hands like it was a gun. And he had his left hand in his pocket. And he said, shoot me. I have a gun in my pocket. And the Toronto policeman got out, drew his firearm, saw the situation, did nothing, and then the gunman surrendered.
That was a cell phone in his hand.
Yeah.
It wasn't a firearm. Wow. Looked like a gun to me in the video.
Well, the way he was brandishing it. And he said, shoot me in the head. He wanted, this was a suicide by cop situation.
Exactly. And the cop denied him that.
That's right.
And I think
incredible restraint by law enforcement. You know, the United States, the policeman would have shot him because of the incident.
And because of the cell phone. Looked like a gun.
Good enough. His arm is extended. He would have said, my life is in mortal peril, which is what they're taught to say. And then he would have engaged and killed him. And we would have no idea what this all went on.
Your regular correspondent, John, says, Waffle House, the shooter's guns were taken away and given to the father under the condition that the father locked the guns and deny access to his son. He broke federal law by turning the weapons back over to the son. The father now has liability for his son's behavior. Why is Malcolm saying laws are required? Guns were taken away and the father broke the law.
That's a federal agreement if that's the case. And I agree with him on that point. If the father signed a release for that, the way I see it is, well, your weapons are taken at a federal level, you should never get them back.
All right. Thank you for that. And then
I'll simplify that one.
And then Paul says, ATF, how about the president charges the ATF agents with the job of going through and looking for gun licenses issued to everybody that's been charged with a mentally deficient action? Paul from Williamstown.
Oh, there's no gun licenses. There's only the only time you're ever checked is when you purchase a firearm, and those records are because of an agreement with the NRA and the Bush administration. Those records are destroyed in 72 hours.
Wow. I think they were being destroyed prior to that, weren't they?
They were being destroyed in like 2 weeks.
Well, no. What I meant was that policy of not maintaining records and not having databases that the NRA promulgates has been going on for a long time.
And it has deliberately pushed so that there would be no records of firearm purchases. So when ISIS and Al-Qaeda purchase their firearms, you're going to have to go by the memory and the notebook of the gun seller at a gun store.
And he's not going to want to make a profit, right?
Many of those people do have, well, the shooter in Orlando, when he went there, the gun store owner did contact law enforcement and said this guy tried to buy a firearm. Then he purchased a firearm, and they had only the written records in that store. All federal records gone.
All right, let's change subjects. We now move on to Mike Pompeo. Rand Paul changed his mind. How do we know? He tweeted about it.
He said it. I saw him on the TV this morning.
Right before this was to happen, he tweeted moments before the vote that the president had talked with him, and he had changed his mind. Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo narrowly eked out an endorsement from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Monday after President Trump and a Democratic senator intervened at the last minute, all but guaranteeing that he will be confirmed by the full Senate later this week.
Well, it was never in doubt, was it? I mean, he was going to be the Secretary of State.
Yeah, I'm excited. I realize that he's a hawkish guy, but Trump certainly has glaring deficiencies in terms of attracting talented people to help advise him around the country. Pompeo is a qualified person. You may disagree with him on policy, but he is a qualified person to help advise the president. I think it's good that the Senate is going to allow Trump to have his choice, a person that he trusts, person he has a good relationship, to be a Secretary of State.
Well, let's try it the other way. JP, it seems to me we know a lot about what his natural inclinations are as a sort of super hawk. In terms of invasion of Iran, perhaps Iraq, and the things that he's been for all along. Now he says, I've had a change of character. I don't believe that kind of stuff anymore. Now I'm basically a peaceful fellow. I don't trust people who have a demonstrated position. And that has been his as a hawk. I don't believe him. I don't believe him for a second.
So you're afraid that he's going to try to convince Trump to change his mind about whether to go after Iran or Iraq or wherever?
No, I think they're on the same page.
Yeah.
There are a lot of pundits now who are saying...
What page is that Trump is on?
Page 3
in your newspaper. Seems to go back and forth all the time.
Page 3 in your newspaper. So, so what it means to me is that they are... that they are on the same page, Trump and Pompeo. And I don't think character changes. I think Freud was exactly right about that.
I think that, first off, the president has a right to have the staff that he feels comfortable with in these positions.
Why?
Well,
you have advice and consent. There's a reason for that.
Consent. Well, I agree with that. Well, what I'm saying is he has a right to have that. I think that Pompeo was a placeholder at CIA. Thank God he wasn't there long enough to do any real damage. I've met him. But going over to Secretary of State, I just think he's Trump's man. And he will do whatever Trump says. And that's why he's been getting along with Trump. You know, this is the man who has to literally read the national intelligence brief to Trump every morning to make sure that he understands what's important is what not important. The only saving grace is that he finally turned the CIA over to a professional, even though she has her own issues. My issue with Pompeo is his open racism against Muslims in the past and bigotry against Muslims that he has put out publicly and in on the web. The probability that he will affect essentially a militarized State Department and diplomacy will just be a mouthpiece for Trump and the Defense Department.
Mm. Well, is that always the case, that the State Department represents the point of view of the man in the White House?
Not just that he represents his point of view, but that he's just an instrument and an extension of a hammer, and it will not be a mouthpiece for diplomacy at all.
Well, I'm with Mike on this one.
Okay.
I mean, no, I am, because we have an example of which runs counter to your narrative, which is we had a previous Secretary of State who has just been dismissed because he wasn't on the same page with Trump. And so therefore, these people don't get chosen always because they're going to be mouthpieces for Trump. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. JB, did you have anything?
I don't have anything to add other than I think he's a qualified guy. You can disagree with him on policy. I'm not a big hawk myself. I'm disappointed by Trump's seeming move to the more hawkish stance with Pompeo and with Bolton. But I'm a big believer that the President of the United States should have advisors around him that he trusts and believes in, and this guy seems qualified, and I hope he does a good job. He obviously had a disconnect with Tillerson, which I did not think was healthy for our relationships with others around the
question.
World.
Question. Did you believe that Trump wasn't going to be a hawkish president before he made these choices?
Well, Trump I would say that he hit a big... leg of his foreign policy message when he was running was that the Iraq war was a huge mistake and that we spent trillions of dollars and thousands of lives on something where we shouldn't have been involved in. So that was, I thought, the key message from him on hawkishness. So my perspective was maybe he would not do that as president.
But by now, have you learned that nothing he says means anything?
You know, the man is a documented pathological liar.
But some of the time he says that he's against war.
Yeah, coming from the intelligence community, my job was to quantify our enemies and understand their mechanical, you know, the mental workings of them. And within 5 minutes, anyone could figure out that you could not trust a word Donald Trump said. And last year, the Washington Post documented over 2,500 empirically quantified lies that this man said. So why would you have believed that?
Well, I mean, more to the, but it seems like the point is, just calm down.
You gave me coffee.
All right. but it also seems like just awfully jumpy. Just
look at your cup.
Deep breath. All right. But we also have to say, like, don't you think eventually whoever he gets in there is gonna. I mean, everybody seems to have a very short expiration date, right? I mean, when you get somebody in, whether it's Tillerson, it's not going to take very long before they sour on them. I mean, I use this analogy a lot, and then we have to take a break. But you go to your doctor's office, and they have old magazines because that's what doctor's offices have to have. And you read, and you pick up an old magazine, you know, from 3 months ago, and they're like, whoa, you know. Kelly is going to be a guiding influence on the president. He's going to make sure that he goes by the rules. He's going to bring order. And, you know, now we see him sneaking out with his cell phone so Kelly doesn't hear him. And, you know, it's just any day now, right? So, I mean, all of it has an expiration date, yeah. Doesn't it?
What's his mooch span?
Certainly has an expiration date. He's certainly a well-documented liar. But he has a good relationship with this guy. This guy's qualified. I think he was first in his class at the United States Military Academy. Why not approve him to be Secretary of State? Do you think that there's some other person that would be better?
Oh, no, I agree. Yeah, yeah, I understand.
I don't care about Pompeo anymore. Trump wasn't going to have a war. I mean, that's just...
You just want to say...
That my barber has old magazines, too. But they're not the same.
Oh, all right. Wow. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Malcolm Nance. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Oh, I know you're waiting for us to come back from a break, but damn, that was entertaining. All right. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. We have letters.
We do.
We'll go to those.
Okay. Naomi from Canaan says, Naomi from Beacon says, morning panel, absolutely right on. Mr. James Shaw should get the highest civilian award the White House can bestow. All right.
Yeah, he won't go.
And then R says, liability. A gun should be registered to one person. And if that gun is used in a crime, the owner should be criminally liable in a big way. Almost every in-school shooting is done by a kid under 18 who brought a gun from home. Guns are treated like family lawnmowers. Wrong. And then from Andre. Good morning, panel. I am a gun owner. Instead of going after certain specific weapons like the AR platform, I would like to see some discussion about redesigning all these high-capacity platforms so they can have fixed internal magazines that can only be loaded manually through the action. In simple terms, do not allow the manufacture of rifles with detachable magazines. They can look like military weapons. They just can't accommodate detachable magazines.
Technologically hard to do, and you'd have to get that through all the gun manufacturers,
and
we can't legislate it. It's the market. And I have to tell you one thing. I used to be an NRA member, NRA range instructor, all that. Then about 15 years or so ago, they started becoming crazy in what they were putting out in their flyers. I mean, literally, get a gun, prepare to defend yourself against the government. Being in the government at the time, I just thought that's insane. The Second Amendment was never designed to fight against American tyranny from your presidency. That's their literature, not
reality. I am
reality.
So glad we have you here, Malcolm. Rebecca says,
for the coffee.
Sovereign citizen. Good morning, panel. Question for Malcolm. I have a family member who's a member of this sovereign citizen movement. They are mentally unstable and like to brag about knowing how to make homemade bombs and other anti-personnel devices. I am frightened. Is there some agency that I can contact about this? Thank you. Becca from Catskill.
Boy, I'm going to leave that to you guys. And she's from Catskill, too. Well, just down
right across the river from
here. I don't want to make a joke, yeah. but it's down
well,
that
I mean,
side
any,
of the river.
Anybody who you has a family member who's mentally ill it does have a challenge. We do have laws that protect people's individual rights.
That's right, Mike.
It's a challenge, yeah.
Yeah, it's a challenge. But, I am not a lawyer and I am not a law enforcement officer, okay? I'm just an old spy. But if you see the precursors or materials that look like that person is practicing with those things, most bombers blow themselves up or injure themselves severely. So if you see containers of black powder, ball bearings, an electrical workbench, and the person has never touched electronics in their, or electrical items in their lives, you may have an obligation to report that to law enforcement. Mm. It's entirely up to you, but just because they have an interest in it, we all have interest in things, and it's entirely up to your own personal discretion, and let public safety know that, and they'll make a determination.
Yeah, well, I'd say you have a moral and ethical responsibility if somebody is going potentially hurt other people to take action, call law enforcement. I agree.
And that's where Malcolm, I think, gives us all a very important lesson here. You got to really see the materials. I mean, I have friends who have had relatives, for example, who really are in great distress, let's put it that way. And they call and they're told the same thing every single time. We can't do anything unless they are really in danger of doing harm to somebody else or to themselves. And that's the new standard. When the mental hospitals were emptied, that was the standard that was adopted. Mm-hmm. Good morning, panel, says Joseph. It's a little long. I'd like to point out that despite the fact that many hundreds of accessories are available in AR-15 rifles, they do not come with legs. These rifles don't walk into schools on their own. Our, capitalized, children are going into their own schools to kill classmates. The kids in Columbine were aware that the three boys were talking about attacking the school. No one said anything. What may have stopped an incident in Vermont was the students themselves turning in the demented child. In our society, that has malformed our kids to the point where killing their class seems like a good idea. The rifles do not fire all by themselves, just saying, said Joseph.
There's a very cute video that's on the internet right now with a small dog running down a pier at a giant pile of walrus that are laying on a pier and chasing them all into the water. And it was headlined, Kids versus the NRA. And kids are now changing this. They understand their power. But, the adults have to be the adults in the room, too. And just because you're a firearms owner doesn't mean that you can't look out for the safety and health of the community.
Tara says, licensing. I have a license and insurance to massage people. it strikes me as reasonable to require the same of people who own guns. And that's from Tara, who puts a saying at the bottom, do or do not. ... There is no try. Yoda.
Yeah. In Boulder, Colorado, you can't bring a dog onto one of their main streets near their city hall. But you can walk around with an AR-15, fully loaded.
Ann says, Waffle House hero. Since this White House has been unwilling to acknowledge the Waffle House hero, surely there are other organizations, groups, etc., political and otherwise, that can step up and do the job, not simply giving this young man his due, but embarrassing the current administration in the process.
All that is possible, I assume. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Malcolm Nance. Ray Graff is next with news. We'll be right back.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Malcolm Nance all on the program this morning. We welcome your letters. And let's see. While we were at break, the story that broke is that President Trump's VA nominee has been accused of overseeing a hostile workplace, overprescribing drugs, and, just for added measure, drinking on the job.
In
now,
uniform.
Now, White House physician Ronnie Jackson's confirmation hearing to head the VA has been postponed indefinitely.
Yeah, the indefinitely word is very important.
While lawmakers review allegations related to him.
Well, and also, apparently, the VA organizations are not happy with this because of the playing around with the idea of privatizing the VA.
Right, but isn't this the guy that gave the clean bill of health to Donald Trump?
He was.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Said Donald Trump is. What did they say? If he changed the way he would eat, he would live for till he was 200. He said he had just great genetics. That he was 239 pounds, and not obese. That's
right.
And
when they said that, people were go, "Hey, what, doctor? Are you drunk?" And now apparently he was.
Oh, that's sad.
Joe for the kill. Yeah, so yeah, but they said that the reasons were a toxic work environment. And by the way, that was Mike Flynn when he was at Defense Intelligence Agency, a horrific top-down dictatorial manager. And for them to say that, that means it was documented somewhere, whether it was in counseling, which we call in the armed forces officers enlist to get counseling letters, letter of reprimand somewhere, or it was involved with, some subordinate who filed a military case. So there's documentation there somewhere. Another one was excessive drinking on duty. And then the overprescribing of prescription drugs. He's going to be torn apart by the Department of the Navy, much less, he could lose his star. He could quite honestly.
Don't you
go
think by now, though, he's going to probably want to spend more time with his family and pursue other interests?
He would have to retire from the Navy, and the Navy can hold you until they have cleared it up.
So what happens? So probably now they just pull the.
Yeah, don't you think that this is a prelude to that? I mean, Alan was referring to it. It was indefinitely postponed, the hearing. That's the beginning of the
end. It's right up there with Trump nominating or asking for his private pilot to head the FAA, right? Or this congressman who was a former military pilot and who ran an air museum that he was defrauding was his nominee for NASA. Okay, these people, it's like you've got to be convicted of something, or you've got to be, suspected of something to be nominated in the Trump White House.
Well, there's a bit of arrogance.
No honest men allowed.
I wonder if he gets to or wants to continue being his personal physician, whether that's in the cards or not.
I'm going to bet that he will not continue as the president's personal physician. I'm just going to bet that.
All right.
And there may be a confrontation behind the scenes between the White House and the Pentagon and the Navy over whether this guy, based on these allegations, should be investigated and suspended. What do you think, Malcolm?
My 20 years in the Navy and my family's 120-year career in the armed forces, mainly Navy, tells me that they are going to go at him hammer and tongs. And if he does not resign his commission and retire happily as an admiral and be given an out, they will take him apart. Because that system, when it's turned on, it is ruthless and relentless, no matter who's the president.
But not in the EPA. In other
no,
words,
EPA. No, clean air and water.
Yeah.
Oh, no way. Yeah. You can do anything you want.
There's no police in the EPA.
But how do you get to this point of the guy holding down the job for that long as the White House physician without those charges coming before the nomination? Like, isn't there any pre-vetting where there's like, oh, not a bad idea, except the man seems to have a problem?
Well, the thing is that you have your annual evaluations, and that's a general, that and the selection boards for you to go up a rank are the general ways that they watch you. Things can fall under the radar. If this most likely came from subordinates who at some point, as I said, have some documentary evidence, which was taken into consideration at his promotion boards, he just made rear admiral, most likely on the basis that he was a favorite of this current president.
And how many? Three others or four other presidents? He has served for four presidents.
Yeah, but the White House doctor's an easy job. It's the health of all staff in the White House, not just the president himself. And that person is a go-to guy. But, you can stay in that position. But once you're selected and looked at for other things that are not military. If you're still in the military, the faults that are found out can now be used against you.
This story is just breaking, so I don't know the details here. But when they say something like he was, the allegations include overprescribing of drugs, who is he prescribing to if he is the White House doctor?
Well, he has a staff, and he actually was in charge of a small naval command.
So prior to this.
Yeah, they could have found out that, you know, it could come out, and this happens all the time, later on when people reach a certain rank and NCIS and other investigative bodies start going through your career with a fine-tooth comb, that you could have had a girlfriend or a boyfriend or someone else or an associate, and you were giving them prescriptions, and then they later get into trouble. And you already got promoted. And so he is now about to find out what real investigatory power is like. And clearly from what the Republicans and the Democrats are saying in the Senate, there's no way this guy's going to pass if any of this is even remotely true.
Yeah, but it is interesting that it comes because of a policy dispute. And the policy dispute here is the privatization of the VA.
Yeah, that's most likely. I mean, if he was, you know, this is a guy who was just selected out of obscurity. I mean, his being promoted to the director of the VA, the second largest federal agency, at 300,000 followers. He had 40 people at one command. I've had triple that number, and I'm nowhere near his rank, and I'm not even qualified to open the door at the VA. Anyone with any decency would have said, I'm sorry, I'm not qualified, I'm honored. Go find yourself somebody who is a real administrator of hospital systems. Not him.
Yeah. Kellyanne Conway said that Melania Trump is superior first lady to Michelle Obama.
It's an alternate fact.
She was talking to TMZ. A TMZ reporter asked her if the media's apparent reluctance to put Melania Trump on the cover of U.S. magazines when Michelle Obama was featured on so many, and Conway suggested that Melania Trump is superior to Michelle Obama.
Help me, Jesus.
Well, Melania Trump, the first lady, the current first lady, has not had a high profile. She hasn't embraced issues and gone out there and stumped for them.
Well, she hasn't wanted it, right?
I don't think so. And that's certainly a reasonable speculation. There's some reporting today that preparing the first official state dinner is finally something that she kind of likes to do, and she's risen to the occasion, and it's going to be very formal, and it will be proper and have some nice amenities to it, and that's something that she likes, but she'll be able to wear designer clothes like the big hat. White hat that she just appeared on
the hat
at the White House
morning.
With alongside.
Let me tell
her.
You, if you ever mention Kellyanne Conway in front of me, I'm going to always default to this story. That woman lied to my face and then went right out on national TV and lied about what she had lied to me about. So nothing that comes from her mouth can be trusted. To say something as disgusting as saying, you know, Michelle Obama doesn't rank. This is the woman who Melania Trump plagiarized Michelle Obama's very words. Okay? I feel sorry for Melania Trump. She looked like she was having a grand time at Barbara Bush's funeral, hanging out with Michelle and Barack Obama. She clearly does not like being around the trappings of the White House or the president. But for Kellyanne Conway to push that narrative to disgrace a first lady who certainly one of the most educated first ladies, is just in itself disgusting.
All right.
And it ain't the coffee.
That ain't the coffee.
All right, let's go on. The other thing, too, we should note is that President Bush has been hospitalized, suffering sepsis, which is very serious, dangerous, and had a went into the hospital like 12 hours after the conclusion of his wife's funeral. Obviously, he suffers from Parkinson's disease. He's 93 years old, and they say he is responding, but yet still in intensive care. Mm. So a sad story, but.
Yeah, they said that as 2,400 people filed in to pay the respects to Barbara Bush, he was there for a good part of that, and he shook hands with people and greeted people, which must be exhausting, and certainly the experience probably takes its toll in addition to the grief he must be having. Yeah. One of his
terrible. Is sepsis transmittable?
No, I don't think so.
I think it takes longer than that. It's an infection. It causes by an infection.
I was thinking about the 2,400 people.
Well, no, it's just that his spokesman said today that he's just hoping to get well so he can go up to Kennebunkport, Maine, to the family compound where he goes every summer, and that might help, you know, let him get his strength back and heal. And, you know, everybody wishes him well. I mean, he remains a very respected and certainly people who disagreed with him politically still like him a lot. He's very, very well liked and supported by people.
It is, we'll end there. Go ahead.
The book 41 by George W. Bush about him is an amazing book. A lot of my very closest Democratic friends love that book. And I was struck at the funeral by what a beautiful family they have and how they do seem to, whether you agree with them or not politically, they're really a class act.
But true patriots that love this country. And you Absolutely. Can see that. And just good people. I mean, never agreed with George W. Bush on virtually anything out there. The man broke the Middle East and everything. But you can tell he was a president that maintained the honor and dignity of the station. And so did his family. And it's a loss for all of us. And I hope this isn't a case of give-up-itis, where, you know, he just feels that he would be more comfortable with his wife.
Yeah, it's sad. You know, what's amazing about W, you know, Bush 2, as we call him, is that when he left office, he was really low in the polls back in the 30s.
23, actually.
Wow. That's amazing. A few weeks ago, I think he was getting a 64 favorability in some polls. People remember him being a nice guy.
Comparisons
they don't remember his policies.
Work well.
Exactly. As compared to what?
Well, I was going to say, you know, I as much as I never agreed with George W. Bush, and for many of the reasons you articulated so well, Malcolm, if he went to speak to one of my kids or my grandchildren who were in a group in the White House or Boy Scouts or something like that, I would not be worried at all. I'm sure he would be a class act, and currently that's not the case.
All right, let's talk about Michael Cohen. The White House can't hide Trump's worry about Michael Cohen, and apparently they seem to have a little bit like they have something to worry about. President Trump has not been tweeting like a man with nothing to fear. Over the weekend, he tried to project confidence that his longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, under federal investigation for possible bank fraud, wire fraud, and campaign finance violations, will not flip to avoid legal trouble. But in doing so, and skipping a denial of wrongdoing, the president implied two things. One is that Cohen would need to strike a deal with prosecutors to avoid charges or prison time. Trump's tweet did not even entertain the idea that the investigation will turn up nothing because Cohen committed no crimes. The second is that Cohen possesses damaging information about the president. Trump says he believes Cohen will keep his mouth shut, not that Cohen can talk all he wants because there is no dirt to dish.
You know, every time I hear this story about Michael Cohen and Donald Trump, I the music, the klezmer version of the Godfather theme jumps into my head. And the phrase, Fredo as Tom Hagen, the consigliere, pops into my head. This is just the worst disaster of a mafioso crew that you can ever see. This guy is, Donald Trump's literally attempting to get this guy to believe that he won't flip. When it comes down to his family, okay, these people are going to start dangling dozens upon dozens of years in a federal prison. And if he gets pardoned, New York State has harder white crime laws and sentencing guidelines. And all of this was done in New York City. So the Southern District of New York, Schneiderman, they're going to rip him apart and send him up to Dunmore or someplace like that forever. This guy's going to flip, or he is going to go down for the president. And it'll be fascinating either way for me.
I have a legal question, though.
Yeah.
He was the personal attorney for Donald Trump.
Right.
When you're talking about him flipping, he's not – I mean, it would be unethical for prosecutors to ask him if he's in a talking mood for anything that was confidential and covered by the attorney-client privilege. Am I correct about that? I mean, or is he at liberty to just –
Unfortunately – he was not acting in the capacity of a lawyer, which is why they got that crime fraud exception, which is an extremely high standard for them to. And that's also why they conducted raids, because they knew he would destroy materials. And they got that exception from a judge who said, yes, it is likely that he was not acting as a lawyer, but acting as part of a criminal enterprise. And that's why we have all this material. I think Donald Trump is terrified at this, and I think Michael Cohen at some point is going to have to figure out that he's more Fredo than Tom Hagen.
You know, there is this new narrative about Trump not doing a second term. Morning Joe this morning was waxing eloquent, you know, about it.
Posited by his former wife, Ivana Trump.
That's right. And they may be trotting that out as a sort of precursor to, hey, I've had enough of this. This doesn't look good. But it's too late now.
Donald Trump's not that guy. Donald Trump will stay there and milk this for all it's worth. He won't resign. He will literally have to be dragged out of the Oval Office scraping the marble with his fingernails.
Yeah.
You paint a picture, Malcolm.
I see a big smile
on your
face,
Alan. That's just my opinion.
All right, let's final topic this morning in our last 3 minutes, and as we mentioned by the white hat, Emmanuel Macron is in town. There will be a state dinner. Is it the first state dinner?
First.
Yes,
first state dinner.
And so we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but the president coming under increasing pressure from French and German leaders this week to not scrap the three-year-old nuclear agreement, and those negotiations will start today. So what happens?
JP?
I think it'll be a great party. I'm not sure about the international implications of the state dinner, but I think it's a good opportunity for hopefully Trump to build a better relationship with President Macron or PM Macron.
I have very little to add to that. I have expectations that are very low that there will be anything more than a big party tonight at the White House.
I think Macron has got this guy figured out. So have the Chinese, so have the North Koreans. All right, bring him to Paris, show him real luxury, wine him and dine him, get him to do what you want. And I think Macron is leading him around by a nose ring, and he's going to get a concession on Iran and climate change. And Trump will go along with that until he remembers that, you know, he has a base that absolutely hates Macron and everything there is about France.
That's the tension. The tension is between the base and, you know, wanting to be presidential. You're right.
Yeah, and you're right. The world leaders have figured out you got to flatter this guy and treat him like he's somebody really important, and he really is. But treat him that way and show him a lot of deference and respect, and you begin to get.
That's called being a sucker.
Yeah, play him for a sucker.
But he does not do that well with the women leaders, as opposed to Macron.
Oh, he hates them.
All right, we'll end there. Thank you very much, everybody, for being with us. My thanks to Malcolm Nance, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain, thank you very much. We won't see you next week. Safe travels to you. Have a lovely vacation, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
What
is this vacation?
You should try it, Alan. It's lovely. It really is lovely.
Yeah, you do it sometimes. It's really good, you know?
Alan, thank you. We'll be back right after this.